This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The Informer Daily is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. At Joy 94.9, we'd like to pay our ongoing respects to elders past, present, and emerging. The Informer is funded in part by the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.com.au, and of course, the members and donors of Joy 94.9.
This is the Informer Daily for Friday, the 15th of May, 2020. I'm your host, Arian Potts. Today, just in time for Ida Hobbit Day on Sunday, we've got filmmaker Logan Muka here to talk about his film We're All In This Together, which is being released to the public today. The film takes stories from everyday LGBTIQA+ folk in Melbourne and recontextualizes them and tells them in a different way. And Nicholas Kamenyu-Sandry has a book review. But first, this bulletin.
This is Dee Mason with the Joy 94.9 COVID-19 update for the 15th of May. National Cabinet will today discuss the economic and mental toll COVID-19 is taking on Australia as the country records its highest ever jump in unemployment. In the past month, around 600,000 people lost their jobs and an additional 600,000 people had their hours cut. Beyond the economic impact this will have, mental health experts are warning millions of dollars in additional funding will be needed to ensure mental health services can handle the increased demand. Doctors in France and Northern Italy are reporting an increase in a rare illness in children, similar to the one being seen in America, Britain and Spain. The illness has symptoms like those of toxic shock syndrome and Kawasaki disease and has already claimed the lives of three children in New York. There is no confirmation that it is linked to COVID-19, but National Cabinet has requested urgent advice on it, which will likely be given at today's meeting. The Federal Health Department says the finger prick tests they bought at the height of the pandemic likely have little use in diagnosing COVID-19. 1 million of the test kits were purchased amid claims they were cheaper and more effective than other kits available at the time. Further testing on the kits shows they have limited use in diagnosing COVID-19, as many infected patients haven't got enough antibodies to show up on the test. The effectiveness picks up the longer the person has the infection. Italian mobsters who have been released from prison in Italy over fears of a COVID-19 outbreak behind bars are now being put back into jail. The release of 370 mafiosi was heavily criticised, especially given the strict rules around mob members in prison, meaning little contact is made between them and other prisoners. Local media is reporting one of the first prisoners to return to jail was Cosa Nostra boss Antonio Sacco. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro is defending the climbing death toll in Brazil, saying the deaths are not equal to the economic harm of keeping the country in lockdown. He says he will talk to the governors of the states to ask them to lift their current social distancing restrictions. Over 13,000 Brazilians have died from COVID-19 and a further 196,000 are infected. It's expected these figures are much lower than the reality as testing in the country has been limited. Victorian Treasurer Tim Pallas says the economic impact of COVID-19 on the state will be 140 times worse than the impact of this summer's bushfires. Advice from Treasury shows the pandemic will shrink the economy by 14%, increasing the state deficit by millions of dollars in a quarter that was previously expecting a surplus. Fraser, Moreton and North Stradbroke Islands will be reopened on the weekend, but they can only be visited by people who live within 150 kilometres of them. Although they will only be open for day trips for now, the Queensland State Government is hoping to be able to allow camping there by the school holidays. On the first day of eased restrictions, New South Wales has confirmed 8 new cases of COVID-19. All cases are from close contacts or known hotspots. Premier Gladys Berejiklian says they are a reminder of the increased individual responsibility people must take as restrictions ease.
This is the Informer Daily on Joy 94.9 and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Melbourne-based filmmaker Logan Muka has made a number of works. His latest is We're All In This Together, which tells stories of LGBTIQA+ elders using younger people. It premiered at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival and has been to a few other festivals since then and has been really well received. I spoke with Logan about the public release.
So the film is kind of made just over a year ago. It was made with a City of Melbourne annual arts grant. And it's a film that it kind of explores five stories of Melbourne's queer history. But instead of just kind of using the traditional approach of interviewing subjects and just letting them speak themselves, I wanted to engage young people actively in the project. So I got young queer actors and performers in Melbourne to then perform those interviews to camera.
And how did you choose who to include?
For the stories themselves, I wanted to make sure I had a kind of a broad cross-section of the community and stories that kind of went through the decades. So the first story starts in the 1950s and the last story is something that's kind of currently happening. So I kind of wanted to, it was just purely just trying to find a kind of variety and range. When I started the project, I had a few ideas of what I wanted to do, but the project kind of started out of my own reflection of myself that I didn't really know too much about Melbourne's queer history. So I went to the Australian Gay and Lesbian Archives, Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, and a wonderful person there called Nick pretty much gave me a crash course on Melbourne's queer history and I took it from there.
So what sort of themes really came out when you were doing your research?
Probably sounds like a bit of a cliche, but a lot of struggle. I feel that's probably a pretty common theme throughout the ages, and I think any queer person will be able to attest to that. Probably the most significant stories in our life revolve around struggle. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing, other theme that I suppose the film itself tries to reflect on is memory, and just remembering things and trying to show respect to people that have done things that have made the world a better place for us and not forgetting that and understanding and respecting those people that did that for us.
The people whose stories you're telling, are they at all featured in the film, or is it entirely with younger people replacing them? Or
yeah, so it's entirely of young people replacing them. But the stories themselves are all. I can use this approach that is used a bit in theatre called verbatim. Mm-hmm. So essentially, I went and interviewed these five people, and from that, I did like hours of interviews, transcribed them all, had like tons of pages of transcripts, and then those essentially were edited down into like try and get the simplest, most kind of concise versions of their stories. So it's all in the original interviewees' words. So none of the original people who are interviewed actually in the film at all. I think that was a very clear creative decision that I just wanted young people. I wanted it to just be about young people and their reflections on those stories.
Did you get much pushback on that idea?
No, surprisingly, I thought I would, because obviously some people got it straight away. But a few of them, obviously, it took a bit of explaining. And I think me trying to explain the process to them, I was like, oh, so I'm going to interview you, but you're not going to be in the film. I don't think, a few of them were kind of like, they didn't quite understand. But I think when they finally saw the film, we launched in the gallery. And then everybody came to see the film and they all saw it and they all just were like absolutely amazed and blown away of it. And they thought it was so powerful to see their stories told by someone else. So I think conceptually it was hard to understand for a few of them until they actually saw the final product. In terms of the pushback, I think at the end, everybody kind of understood the aims that, the aim was to kind of relive this history in a new way.
What got you interested in this idea?
Well, to be honest, I think it came from a shortfall in my knowledge. Obviously I knew we kind of went through the HIV/AIDS crisis, but I never really knew any of the specifics of that. I knew we had a gay liberation here, I knew about the Tasty nightclub raids that happened in the 90s, but my knowledge is kind of quite thin. I've done a lot of documentaries overseas before about gay rights. So I did and queer rights. So I knew a lot about those issues overseas. I was in Sydney doing my postgrad studies in filmmaking. So I made a film about Mardi Gras and the origins of that. When we talk about queer history in Australia, we always kind of gravitate towards Mardi Gras, but nobody really knows much about Melbourne. So it kind of came out of a birth of my own lack of knowledge and then realizing that a lot of people my age in the queer community didn't know it either. So I think, that was the main thing. I wanted to understand more myself, and I wanted to help other people my age understand it as well, the history that came before us.
Hmm. And what sort of work have you done overseas?
So years ago, take me back, when I first started making documentaries, I made, it's coming up almost 10 years now, I did a feature documentary called East Bloc Love, which is about queer rights across Eastern Europe, in the Eastern Bloc, which focused on Belarus's first Pride Parade, which was, you know, a horrible affair. It was a group of young activists. You know, the police came and arrested and beat up everyone. And then, so I made a documentary about that that went quite well. And then next year I went off to Moscow to participate and kind of document the pride that happened there in Red Square. That would have been 2011. And then from then I've just kind of, you know, I've done a lot of other things, but I've kind of quite just been exploring my form, I suppose, in short filmmaking, and done a lot of trying to focus those stories back home since then. So it's usually about queer rights, queer stories, queer culture. I did one for the ABC a couple of years ago called Danny Boy, which is on iView still, about drag king culture in Melbourne. So all bits and pieces, usually about, yeah, gay rights, queer rights, and queer histories.
This film has been premiered at the Melbourne Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Is that correct?
Oh, which one? Sorry. It premiered at, we had a kind of gallery launch at a gallery called West Space. And so that was just kind of like a launch that was close people involved in the film, but our proper premiere was at, festival premiere was at Melbourne Queer Film Festival.
Oh, yep.
And that was the most beautiful experience because we had a panel discussion with it as well. So we had the five original people whose stories they were based on, the five of them sitting up together in the panel.
Mm.
was a beautiful thing. It was kind of like a beautiful end to the, I suppose, the whole production process for me to see those five people together for the first time, you know, sitting there talking about the film was amazing.
What was it like having an audience see your work for the first time?
Nerve-wracking. I'm not one of those. Most filmmakers are kind of in one or two categories. I think either they like thrive off people watching their stuff, but I think I'm more process oriented. Like I love making the films, but distributing it, you know, watching people watch a film terrifies me. And especially with this film, having it premiere the first night at the gallery, because we had a lot of the actors and a lot of the original cast, you know, there wasn't a Q&A, but we had, everyone was there. And like I said, you know, a lot of the people who were involved in the film didn't quite understand the concept. And so having them come and watch the film, like I just kind of think I sat there just nervous the whole night waiting for their responses, but everyone just loved it. In the end, it was amazing. You know, Drew Munro was there, who's the CEO of the Pride Centre. You know, she was there. She came a bit late, and then the film was playing on repeat all night, and she sat and watched the film. And she, I was just, she's very, very forthright woman, and so I was very anxious about her response, because if she hated it she would have told me she hated it, but but then she came up and like gave me a big hug afterwards and told me it was beautiful, and then that just made my day. So everyone, yeah, so that was, it was very nerve-wracking watching these people to see how they'd react, but everyone had the most amazing response to it, which was great.
And it's played in other festivals around the world. Is that,
yes,
correct?
It's gone quite well. Yeah, so mostly it's kind of focused domestically, because it is a very, very local story, very particular to Australia. So we've, you know, had a lot of luck. You know, we played at art galleries, we've played at short film festivals. You know, it was in Mardi Gras Film Festival this year, documentary film festivals. Overseas, it played in Mezi Patra in Czechia, which was formerly Czech Republic, but that's a huge, the biggest queer film festival in Eastern Europe, and I love that festival. But so, yeah, but mostly domestic short film festivals and queer film festivals and human rights film festivals. So it's gone quite, yeah, the last year it's kind of gone around Australia a couple of times over, which has been great. And I think, you know, we probably would have kept on going, but I think because of COVID, with festivals shutting down, it just felt like the right time, especially with Ida Hobbit coming up this Sunday, it just felt like the right time to finally release it online.
And where can people watch We're All In This Together?
So if you just go to my website, it'll be on the front page, which is www.loganmucha.com. And Mucha is M-U-C-H-A, like Mucha. So loganmucha.com.
And how long will it be up for streaming? Is it permanently there?
It will be up indefinitely. So we've kind of done we've kind of just kind of launched it to mark Ida Hobbit on Sunday. So we've just kind of released it a little bit early. But it'll be up. We're kind of doing a big release this Sunday, and it'll be up there permanently.
What sort of projects are you working on now?
So I'm working on a few things at the moment. So I've got a project which is kind of something I've put on hold at the moment, obviously because we haven't been able to shoot, but we'll be shooting and picking it up again in a few months. So that's a project, another one supported by the City of Melbourne, which is about climate change, particularly in Victoria and Melbourne, and looking at that through the lens of young people who will have to, I suppose, bear the brunt of what will happen. So it's about engaging young people and letting them tell their stories and their views on what's going to happen to them in the future. And then I've got a couple other things which have been, I've got funding for, but I probably can't announce until they get publicly announced. But I've got a few, another little queer project on the way, which kind of reflects on lockdown at the moment. So that'll be up in the next few weeks. And yeah, I've got a couple more things in the works, but I can't mention anything at the moment.
One of my thoughts about this time is that it's so extraordinary. And then as soon as it ends, people will slowly start to forget, but it'll happen a lot faster than they think. And I think it's important that we capture the stories of what life is like now.
Yeah, definitely. And I think all these kind of things, it's like that, you know, it's not our fault, particularly our fault, but everyone has this short memory syndrome. And we go through these big crises and then we kind of forget about what happens as soon as we go back to normal really, really quickly.
The new normal, whatever that is.
The new normal, yeah. whatever that is.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, that's it. I think, yeah, I'd love for everyone to kind of jump on and have a look. I think, you know, there's a lot to learn about our queer history locally, especially everyone in Melbourne that could be listening that we don't know about seeing different perspectives of those stories told. And I think it's just, you know, this whole project's about trying to remember and honour those people that have come before us and to acknowledge that there's still ongoing problems today. And I think it's just about, you know, it's funny that the film's called We're All In This Together, because that's become a bit of a slogan at the moment. for the government campaigns, you know, is, you know, came up a little while before all that. But I think, you know, that whole idea came about for our queer community to understand that, you know, there's so many different facets of our community. I think it's about trying to build unity and, you know, acknowledging there's different people and that we should kind of come together and respect each other a little bit more.
That's Logan Mucka, filmmaker and storyteller. The Informer Daily on Joy 94.9 and across Australia on the Community Radio Network. It's time for a book review. Here's Nicholas Kemenyer-Sandry.
So Pantomime by Laura Lamb, it's another fantasy novel, and I know I keep saying that it's not really my genre, but I just find that I'm recommending a lot of them these days. Sorry about that. But the reason why I want to recommend this one is it's not medieval fantasy. It's set quite a ways into the future around or after the Industrial Revolution. It's sort of like turn of the 19th or 20th century. But the setting is not really what's that important. The most important thing is obviously the protagonist, but this protagonist is something else. So the protagonist is an intersex gender-fluid trapeze artist. So Jean Loris runs away from home, changes her name to Micah Gray, is gender fluid, so that means that they can change between either being a girl or a boy, depending. They're intersex, meaning that their physical sex characteristics are ambiguous, and they can just sort of slip into either the role of Micah Gray, the man, or Jean Loris, the woman. And they use that to run away from home because they don't want to be a debutante who's married off to some guy. and join the circus, where they discover a community of estranged LGBT people. And it's actually a really, really good kind of slice of life fantasy book for the most part. Like, most of the book is either dedicated to Jean Loris's life, you know, as a debutante, as a young woman whose mother is trying to marry her off. And because she, Jean Loris, is intersex, the mother, her plan is kind of just get her daughter married off as fast as possible, hope that the man doesn't notice until the ink is dry on the marriage certificate. And Jean finds that this is not to her liking. She doesn't like being used as a pawn in her mother's game to save her status. And she also finds that her mother is not treating her with bodily autonomy and dignity. She keeps getting, you know, rushed off to a doctor's clinic every other month to try and fix her problem, which, if you actually understand the intersex community, that is actually a problem that exists today. Many intersex babies, toddlers, children have surgeries done on them to fix, quote-unquote, their physical sex characteristics, which is a form of abuse, you know, it just is. And Jean Loris runs away from that, becomes Micah Gray, and finds himself now in a circus as a trapeze artist. You know, he starts training as one because he's just naturally acrobatic, and gets to know all of these, you know, outcasts, vagabonds, deviants, and so on in the circus. And what I loved about the circus is that it's not like this idyllic little community of people who are otherwise just totally innocent. Like, there is some tension, there's some bullying, there's a lot of sort of unsavory characters in the circus. You know, these are people who found themselves on the fringes of society, and, you know, it's affected who they are as people. And some of them were put on the fringes of society because they were LGBT in some way. You've got, you know, gay men, you've got bisexual people, you've got a lot of people who just don't fit the normal stereotypes. And what exemplifies to me what's really great about this novel's take on these sorts of people is that at the circus there is a freak show, but all the freaks are dressed up, obviously, but they're only sort of half dressed up. So the example is the bearded lady. You know, every circus has a bearded lady, and Micah, when he first arrives, sees this bearded lady and is like, oh, there's a lady with a beard. But then backstage, the lady obviously takes off the fake beard, but she still has some prominent facial hair underneath. It's just that the fake beard emphasizes something that she already has that's considered by, you know, proper mainstream society to be, you know, unbefitting of a woman. And so there, the people in the circus, they have these deviancies from what's considered normal, but their so-called deviancies are not, like, spectacular. In order to actually sell their deviancies as some kind of spectacle that's worth people paying money to see, they actually have to exaggerate them because they're not deviant enough from what's considered normal to be considered a spectacle, but they are still deviant enough to be considered an outcast from society in the first place. So it's this kind of really interesting take on, you know, what makes people an outcast versus what makes them a spectacle. Like, and really, in real life, nobody should be a spectacle. But also, like, we consider, you know, in our society, we consider minor discretions from what we define as normal to be worthy of pushing someone to the fringes, of excluding them from what they want to do or what we want from most other people. And we try to push them out of, you know, our spaces. And oftentimes, what they do that we consider to be a violation of normalcy is not even, like, worthy enough of our ire that we would consider it to be spectacular. Like, it's just this small discretion. And that's something that I thought was a really interesting thing about this novel. The story is fantastic. A lot of it is just getting to know a big series of characters. You know, Jean Loris as a debutante young woman. We get to know a few of her suitors, a few of her friends who she grew up with. We get to know her parents. We get to know the community, the upper class community where people are kind of vying for social status. And then after she becomes Micah Gray and he runs away from home, through Micah's eyes, we get to know this circus. We get to know, you know, the poorer classes, the working class, the underclass, the people who are considered deviants and, you know, not normal. And it's not like a high fantasy adventure. So don't go in expecting Lord of the Rings. You know, there's no, you know, big, great war, at least not in this book, because it is a trilogy. And yeah, I consider it to be a very, very interesting fantasy novel, a little bit unusual for fantasy. It's a little bit more, you know, slice of life in two different directions. But yeah, I recommend it because it is a very unique novel and I liked it a lot. It's very easy to read. I recommend it. I hope you pick it up. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Nick. That sounds pretty interesting. That's all for us this week. I'd like to thank Nicholas Kamenyu-Sandry, Dee Mason, Emily Johnson, Jordan Johnstone, Rachel Tyler-Jones, and Barry, all of the people at the Community Radio Network for helping make this happen. I'd also like to thank you, our brilliant audience, for listening. I'd love to hear what you think about the program. Send an email to us, theinformer@joy.org.au, and let us know what you'd like to hear. I'm your host and executive producer, Arian Potts, and we'll be back on Monday. Mahalo.
Is funded in part by the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.com.au, and of course, the members and donors of Joy 94.9. You can help us by visiting joy.org.au and become a member or donate. Any amount helps us bring you community-powered radio. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.